some of these things will be taken up in the future. But for now, I think we are operating as per the legislation. Our recommendations and submissions for this year are contained in a book which we circulated to all MPs in May this year. We gave copies to all the MPs and to all governments and provinces and local governments. And we do this annually. And it was presented was launched in May, and it was presented to the joint committees also in June. And I think that's where the chairperson of education and other chairpersons of committees were asked to speak directly to the FSC and engage with the FSC on their specific recommendations. I'm not going to go into detail about the other recommendations, and I'm going to focus essentially for the benefit of this committee on recommendations that have relevance for education, rather than try and focus on all the others. To help me do this, I have a team of people from the commission. This is a difficult time of the year, as you know. Some of us have had to go to the provinces, others have had to come here, so we have to divide our team. On my left here is Chris Bauer, who is responsible for fiscal policy, some of the fiscal policy research relating very specifically to education and social sector. Next to Chris is Mr. Konrad van Gaal, who is our program manager for budget analysis, who does assessments and monitors budget for the different programs in the provinces and local governments in terms of implementation. Next to him is Mr. Henry Eckstein, whom you all know as having worked in Parliament before. He's now our parliamentary liaison officer. I'm based in Cape Town, and I'm responsible for the Cape Town reporting to Parliament. Chair, I will go immediately into the recommendations that we're touching on. With respect to education, we're going to cover aspects of the FSC's assessment of the school nutrition program. We're going to look at the learner support material recommendations that we made. We're going to look at education reviewing of the financing of school infrastructure and educational outcomes. And we cover some aspects of the performance of government departments, especially in the provinces, with respect to some of the education programs. Mr. Van Kaart will take us through that, and I'll call on Mr. Bauer to discuss with us. Have we got slides? Not yet. Oh, we don't have a projector. Okay, can we just read the slides off the paper rather than pull it up? I don't think we have a projector that we can use at the moment. We need to bring a computer. Okay, if you've all got these slide copies, some people don't have them. This one here. Yeah, that one, yeah? Yeah. You've got that one. Yeah. No, not that one, the other one. Yeah. Okay. Okay. The issue of school nutrition has been quite a contentious issue, and school nutrition program has come under scrutiny both by government and provinces and the legislators in different provinces. I believe the chairperson has been to one of the provinces. And we were asked last year by the Select Committee on Finance and the Joint Budget Committee to do an assessment of the school nutrition program and to look at whether it was feasible for this program to take account of the issues of equity, which is enshrined in the Constitution, especially in Section 214 of the Constitution. The issue of equity referred specifically to the fact that in certain homes, in certain provinces, you would get a child who would be at primary school and receiving food, but an older child who was in secondary school or in ECD or in some other institutions would not receive any nutrition. And that raised the whole question of equity. Because if children are granted nutrition in a particular family and one of those children is only getting the lunches and the others are not, the issue of equity does present a problem. So we were asked then by the select committee to examine this discrepancy with respect to the school nutrition program. So the FSC undertook some empirical research to assess what the current state of the program was and whether it was feasible to extend or to accommodate the constitutional equity considerations in that. But yes, the research showed, because we did international practices, best practice internationally, we looked at some of the other provinces and so on, and we found that theoretically it's possible to extend the nutrition program. But there are certain serious handicaps. For one thing, the school nutrition program funding mechanism, it's a grant fund, and there are conditions attached to it. And if there are certain conditions attached to the school nutrition program, and those conditions refer specifically to primary schools, and they refer specifically to a certain group of children, and so on. So we say that yes, the research concludes internationally, yes, one can extend this in certain cases, and given certain conditions, and of course most important if there are funds available, but and theoretically, and some provinces are actually have extended this program to secondary schools, like the Northern Cape, for example, but they are not using that conditional grant for that. The Northern Cape is using some of its equitable share for that, so they're not actually using the school nutrition grant for extending the services to other schools. So while we can conclude that, the commission, though, did the assessment of how the current school nutrition program is being implemented. And we found that before you can even think of extending this program, we need to address the problems of the school nutrition program as it currently stands in the provinces. And we raised several issues of matters of implementation. One of the key areas there is that many provincial education departments have not shown a serious commitment to entrench the nutrition program as their full responsibility, even at the primary school level. And we feel that that is a key area, that until the education departments and provinces start entrenching this as their full responsibility, we are going to have problems. It cannot be. It's too important an issue when children go hungry for us to have this as a something that, as if it's a favor that we are doing for the children. The other most important consideration we found in the current situation is that the personnel who implement this don't have the appropriate skills to implement the program on a full-time basis. So in other words, you get people who are running the program who are not committed to doing it on a full-time basis. And that raises serious problems of implementation. There's also, in certain schools, we found that the amounts that have been allocated are not adequate. And therefore, certain learners do not derive full benefits from the school nutrition program. But attached to this, we also find that the kind of menus chosen for the children sometimes, you know, impact on the kind of nutrition they need to achieve the learning outcomes that we desire. The other problem is that there are certain schools that are considered no-fee paying schools. Now, practically, what that means is that if a school is considered no-fee paying school, then that school should be automatically given feeding schemes, because we are saying that that school has mostly poor children in it. And therefore, you can't be selective in how you deal with the nutrition program. So we feel that very strongly that schools that are categorized no-fee schools should be granted the program. The other problem we found in comparing how the feeding scheme is run in South Africa, especially at primary school level, is that the norms and standards differ across provinces and sometimes differ within the province themselves. There are different education districts and different schools have different norms and standards. And we're arguing that the National Department of Education should try and develop some standard national norms and standards. I think the department will answer for itself here. But I think it's going to be important to have a standard approach to some of these, to this particular program. There are no uniform standards that have been established and managed. And the problems around this is that in terms of the application and monitoring, you cannot really get a sense because if you know, you're not comparing similar standards against similar standards, so it's difficult to monitor. The problem of monitoring the program, we found that the information obtained is not, there's no full information, and the quality of information does not give us an indication of whether the program is being implemented optimally. Information obtained would be useful, I think, for education department and for provinces in planning and the budgeting processes of the program. We found that, you know, in some cases, like I indicated earlier in the Northern Cape, if there's an inadequacy in funding, then I don't see any reason why provinces cannot use funds from the equitable share to supplement the income rather than asking for an increase in the grant. This is being done currently in the Northern Cape. Of course, one of the big issues, and I think this has come up in the press and elsewhere, is the procurement procedures. You know, although there are procurement policies and procedures, in many instances these are completely ignored or being breached. We found that some of the equipment being used is outdated and inadequate, and they definitely need upgrading. Improvement in capacity for the monitoring and evaluation is vital, but in order to address these difficulties, we are not clear whether this would fall in the mandate of the national department or whether it would fall within the mandate of the provinces, but somebody needs to take responsibility for looking at improvements in capacity and in monitoring the evaluation of the NSNP at a national level so that we can have a more standardized approach to that. I know at some instances when National Treasury raised problems, and National Treasury took a decision at national level to ensure that this grant should be monitored nationally. The other problem we found with respect to the school nutrition program was that the feeding days were limited. So in other words, if you say 3 days in a week, people will get, children will get food, and the other days they'd be expected not to get food. That, again, raises the question of equity here. Why would a child only get food on certain days and not on other days? So we feel that there must be an increase in the number of days beyond the current prescribed minimum. Because most implementation really settles on looking at the minimum rather than looking at whether the children need the food across the week. So that's the issue around the nutrition program. I will ask Mr. Bauer here to take us through to the other two submissions on the learner support materials and the school infrastructure and education, and Mr. Pankas can take us to the budget performance issues.
Yeah. Thank you, Jaya. Chairperson, like Jaya has said, the other issue that we looked at was in terms of financing of learner support materials, as this is a very important component in the delivery of the curriculum. So one of the things that we established was that in terms of making interprovincial comparisons, it was quite difficult to see how much is spent on learner support materials. And that emanated from the fact that the way learner support materials were classified or the way it was reported on, it was not standardized. So one of the observations that the FSC made in this regard was that learner support materials should be defined as stationery, textbooks, and learner and teacher aid. And this was in line with international classifications when we looked at literature in other countries. And we also observed that there should be a separate budget for expenditure on textbooks, stationery, learner, and teacher aid. And this observation was made due to the fact that in some cases, we found that maintenance sometimes was lumped together with LSM, which was quite problematic. And I should also make an observation here, or not, that provinces differ in the way that they do things. So you might find that maybe in a particular province, they might have defined it or reported on it the way that we have said according to international trends. But this was not the same across the country. And then also we made an observation that a separate budget is needed for maintenance, repairs and equipment, so that we can separate it from learner support materials. And we observed that this would assist in identifying and monitoring budgetary allocations and expenditure in each area so that we know how much is spent over time and across provinces on learner support materials, because this is a very important component in the delivery of the curriculum. In terms of the review that the FFC undertook on the financing of school infrastructure and educational outcomes, the Commission established that the framework for provincial infrastructure grants should support infrastructure development in areas most in need and where it is most likely to improve learner performance and school outcomes. In other words, the observation was that if we provide infrastructure in those areas, particularly in villages and in informal settlements where there was great need, we were likely to see improved educational outcomes rather than areas that were relatively improved. And the other observation that we noted was that the effective coordination of planning for school infrastructure, including connectivity, should be instituted with immediate effect. That is all on school infrastructure and educational outcomes.
Thank you, Chris, to your members. The section that I look at is an looked at how we can attempt to measure performance and capacity of all government departments. So I'll be presenting a set of five recommendations on how to measure performance. Then we apply that specifically to the education department, and that's the graph at the tables at the back. The evaluative question, what we have is a lot of good financial data with which to measure performance. However, one of the strong themes that comes out in the whole presentation is the need for more non-financial data in order to measure delivery performance. And I think that would be the general message you want to get across in this presentation. The evaluative criteria that we use is derived from Section 2142, A to J of the Constitution. And in particular, we've concentrated on number one, the national interest, which is defined as the alignment with national policies, and explain that a little bit more in detail later. Secondly, the developmental needs of provincial governments, which is essentially we're interpreting that as the capacity to deliver institutional capacity, type of skills and systems. And then the stable and predictable revenue share. Okay, I'm going to start off with the second recommendation because it relates to the alignment of budgets and policies. And we're recommending here that the programs that have been prioritized through policy, through national policy and through State of the Nation and budget speeches would be indicated in the next 3 years budget by an above average growth rate. And clearly then programs that have not been prioritized would have a below average growth rate. Now this is to ensure an alignment between policy objectives and budgets. And it enables us to therefore analyze performance. Now, if we look at particularly at GITA, which prioritizes infrastructure, and GIPSA, which is emphasizing skills training and development of human capacity, it would be true to say that most provinces overall over the past 3 years and in terms of the forthcoming budget have prioritized infrastructure and skills training. Now, what that means specifically is that the infrastructure providing departments like housing, transport, public works in above average growth rates in the budget, whereas the social services are below average in terms of the budget. In terms of skills training, it means that departments very often are now introducing a specific training budget which we can analyze, and that has on the whole been growing faster than average. However, if we look at certain programs within education, in particular further education and training and adult basic education and training, which could be, they have been growing at below average growth rates in terms of the budget, and I'll indicate the evidence of it later on. The other area of skills training are the conditional grants to help professionals train. The first recommendation in the document here is about stable and predictable growth paths. Now, there's a development criteria in the Constitution indicates stable and predictable allocations of revenue shares. And what we are recommending is that between the national and provincial treasuries and, of course, the education departments, they should aim for more stable budget growth paths over the period at which we collect and project our budgets and expenditure for. So that is, therefore, the past 3 years for which we have spending data and budget data, the current year, and then the next 3 years of the medium-term budget cycle. So that is a 7-year period that we have of data, and we should aim to try and ensure a stable growth path rather than a very cyclical or volatile one. Now, what we've noticed is that particularly in newly established programs, and in the case of education, we're talking again about adult basic education, further education and training, as well as ECD, early childhood development, and the smaller programs. So once we move programs outside of the public school system, there's often a trend, first of all, of prioritizing it in policy, giving a very large budget increase that exceeds the capacity of the program or the department to deliver on or to spend. The result is then underspending and then a budget cutback. So we're seeing a spending and a growth path that's very volatile and cyclical. And we're arguing that that's difficult to, it's a difficult environment in which to manage implementation of projects. If your budgets are going up and down, and it becomes very unpredictable and unstable. So the analysis indicates, when we look at across provinces, it's particularly infrastructure and skills training in all departments, which are quite unstable and volatile, and in respect of the particular programs that we analyzed, as we said earlier, again, ABIT, FET, and ECD, but it also applies to welfare, farmer support, and road construction. The third recommendation is about building institutional capacity, and this is about supporting the entrenchment of best practice project planning, particularly as it relates to delivering infrastructure, in the case of education, obviously schools. But there are many instances where the planning and the procurement is done by one department and the implementation is done by another department, and they're disconnected. Particularly the relationship between education and public works. So what's part of this best project, best practice planning and budgeting would be to separate those phases up in different fiscal years and to plan the passing over to the implementation department. There may be other, of course, responses to that. But it's a big part of the reason why in capital spending, particular, is underspending, and it's caused by excessive adjustment budgets and at the end of the year, late disbursements, and very often in the case of responsibility comes, for instance, to municipal departments or to another department like public works, end of year fiscal dumping to indicate that spending happens, but we don't know what's happening for the delivery. Generally, treasuries are strengthening the technical capacity of provinces to undertake such infrastructural capital planning and budgeting. It's been implemented through all the provincial treasuries, and I understand it's within the pool of provincial education departments for the specific personnel allocated to enable this type of infrastructure planning. The fourth recommendation relates to reporting on service delivery outputs, and this is essentially a plea that the data that we use to analyze comes from the provincial budget and expenditure review. The non-financial data has been sitting there for the past 2 years. And in order for us to measure delivery performance, we are recommending that every program, so that would be down to the level of Abbott, FET, ECD, they should be defined by and report in that provincial budget and expenditure review. First of all, the actual and the targeted number of beneficiaries. So in the case, what we have in education, we have the number of learners in the public ordinary school system, but it's not reported for FET, Abbott, or the smaller programs. I'm sure that data is available in the department, but it's not coming through in the provincial budget and expenditure review for us to analyze. Then personnel numbers and budgets for occupational skills level. Again, this data is available through the Bullen Zeller system and we're trying to analyze it. But if we want to target teachers or target engineers or certain professional skills for which there are identified shortages in the public sector, we then also need to be able to separate out the budget and the number of people, number of learners in those programs as well. Then current items, in the case of education, that's obviously learning support materials, and capital assets, schools, but particularly classrooms, should be that are used in service delivery. So every program should report on those. And then in the case of where provincial departments pass this on, either to municipalities or to other service delivery agents, in the case of education, it's independent schools, the provincial department should report on these indicators on the behalf of those who deliver. So if we did that, we would then be able to assess progressive realization, that's the extent to which the target number of beneficiaries is being reached, or whether the growth in the number of beneficiaries is higher than the growth in the number of intended, the targeted population. Efficiency, which is about the cost per classroom or the cost per learner or the cost per teacher, and effectiveness, which is more about what are the educational outcomes, you know, the sick rate, the literacy rate, numeracy rate, and so on. Then our final recommendation is about measuring socioeconomic impact off capital and current spending, and we need to start developing a methodology that can be standardized across all departments. Now, the first the pioneer of this is the Extended Public Works Program, which, for instance, reports on the number of jobs created in food construction, both direct and indirect, its impact on the domestic geographic product of the area, impact on poverty reduction. And what we're saying is this can certainly be extended to school infrastructure, but across all spending in education. There needs to be some method for doing this. If we look specifically at the provincial performance of the provincial education department, this is a table in the main document, it's on page 90. What you do there is across the columns. First of all, look at the real growth rate of budgets over the past 3 years. That's your first column of figures. Second column of figures looks at the real growth of budgets projected over the next 3 years. That's this current year, 2008 and 2009. And then the third column gives you some size of the importance of a category or program of spending to the total departmental spend. And then the fourth and final column is whether it's been under or overspending in the departmental program. The first row, which is all provincial departments, is what the provincial average has been or will be. So in respect of growth, over the past 3 years, the budgets grew by just over 5%, just over 5%. That growth has declined to 4.13%. still higher than average, still higher than the 5% of the economic growth rate. Education, on the other hand, over the past 3 years has grown slightly less, 4.5%, whereas it's quite a bit less over the next 3 years, 2.8%. If I can come back to personal training and capital and skip over to public ordinary schools, public ordinary schools is clearly the major component of education spending. It's 84% of education department spending. So the trends that are indicated there in growth rates are very similar to the departmental average, 4.9 versus 4.5, 2.8, same growth rate. That's the main cost driver. But we were focusing on some of the smaller programs that are listed in the Constitutional Bill of Rights and which are also have policy prioritization. If you look at early childhood development, over the past 2 years, there's been a decline of about -4%. Now, that's probably to do with the shift in funding from conditional grants to provincial or equitable share funding, possibly. Next year, over the next 3 years, it's 7%, which is quite a lot higher than average. And in part, this indicates what we wanted to say about unstable budget growth paths. The past 3 years, it's been declining, and now it's growing quite sharply. And it might be growing too sharply given the institutional capacity to spend and deliver. Adult basic education has been growing at 6.5% over the past 3 years, growing now at 3.5%. That's a fairly a more stable kind of a growth path. And it has been above average, which is correct according to it. Then further education and training, fairly substantial growth of about 7% over the past 3 years, dropping quite significantly down to 1.6%. Yet this is an important part of a school development strategy. Then the primary school nutrition grant, as it's got inherited from health, has been growing very rapidly, 19%. And it also feeds into the earlier recommendations we were saying before. We need the program needs to stabilize before it's launched into the secondary schools. But the growth rate has declined quite considerably, projected to decline to 1.77%, still growing, but that's quite a low rate of growth for the next 3 years. We then shift the focus on the last column on spending performance. On average, provincial departments grown at 2.25%, have underspent at 2.25%. Education has hardly underspent at all, 0.85, very close to budget, well below the Auditor General's 5%. If we look more specifically though, early childhood development, 10% underspent. I think that given that it's probably been a case where it grew too quickly and then wasn't able to spend, the budget declined, but that's quite a high underspend. Adult basic in education is 5%, that's just on the Auditor General's benchmark. Further education and training has not underspent by very much, 2.6%. And the underspending has been quite low on the nutrition grant. It's just over the Auditor General's benchmark, 5%. If I can look at personnel and training, personnel spending has declined over the past 3 years and it's increasing slightly, 1.76, well below average. I'm sure that the new, that will change in 2007, those results. The training budget, I guess this is not about teacher training, this is more about the training of administrative staff within the provincial education department. It's been growing at below average, 3.3, 2.24%, also the underspending high at 16. Capital spending, 3% over the past 3 years, quite a sharp acceleration to 9%. School infrastructure building program, quite a high rate of underspending, about 13% overall. And finally, if you look at some of the data that we have on delivery performance, and this is where we they can see for more non-financial data from the department or some means of getting that educational census or something. Learner enrollment in public ordinary schools has grown at 0.7 by 0.75% per annum. And that has been lower than the real growth in spending. The result is that per learner spending in public ordinary schools has increased by nearly 4% per annum. And that's probably reflected in lower learner educator ratios, which should feed into the quality of educational outcomes a decade down the line. We don't, however, have data for the number of learners in the Abbott FET and ECD programs in the provincial budget and expenditure review. We have data on the number of schools available, but not the number of classrooms, and therefore we can't measure the learner-classroom ratios. And then, in terms of educational outcomes, there's only matric results are presented. So if there were, I believe there'd be grade 3 and grade 6, so there's assessments coming up that'd be very useful to report on that, and then as well as for Abbott CD and early childhood development. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Pondo. Thank you, Chris. That covers our section on education. I won't go into the other aspects, but if members wish to ask questions on some of the other areas, then I'll be quite happy to answer them. So we can probably, when suits you, we can open the floor for discussion, or we can listen to the department.
I'm not sure if that's part of my comments before I call it. I'll allow my members to make whatever comments, questions. I have one thing.
Now, I think when you started with your presentation, you said that you've been requested to look into the question of extending the food nutrition program to the secondary school. But you then went on to look into what is the current state has regarding this program. It doesn't come here whether is it given that now you feel the school nutrition should extend it? Because I don't think what exactly is the position, because that was the initial move. What is the view of the commission regarding the extension of this program, let alone the shortcomings in the implementation of the system as it stands currently? That is one area which will be transparent. And then there was this point which is not here. All provincial and state departments, the question of the role of the PED regarding the NSNP. You made the point that the provincial department seemed not to, it needs to entrench. Now, our view is that this scheme has been taken over from health to the department, and we see that it's being implemented. Now, perhaps if this can be untapped, what is it meant by that? Because the system is running, although there are some implementation challenges. Now, this question of entrenching, this question of provincial department not actually owning it, is not clear. If you can untap it so that we come very, very clear, who is running it presently?
I just echo my, I don't know,
wish I had my consultation there to fully understand what the commission is saying there. The commission made in terms of chapter 13 of the consultation and chapter 9. I wish I had my consultation to fully understand what responsibilities does it confer to the commission as far as the nutrition program is concerned. The third question refers to the first slide where the commission sort of lamented the fact that the funds come in the form of a grant. It would seem in such a form they are constrained. I say that it recommends that there must be other funds added to them. But would the commission recommend that these funds do not come as a form of a grant, they just come as part of the provincial budget, not with the conditions attached. And on that one, I think it was this week's papers that were saying the scheme is in shambles in some other provinces, Eastern Cape, for instance. Schools are not being fed, and monies are disappearing. They have disappeared, in fact. What responsibility or what role could the commission play in such circumstances?
Thank you, Chair. Well, we're happy now, at least we're getting another aspect of school management and governance now. I want to point out that other than so much hate, Eastern Cape, this thing is proceeding in a bit of haphazard manner. In most provinces, I would just add to the few exceptions. What, in our opinion, are the major constraints? I've been trying to follow your paper here. Why is this thing not moving smoothly? In the sense that you find that in other provinces, this thing goes on. And then 2-3 weeks during the school calendar, then things just ebb off. What is the problem? Is it the funding mechanism, conditions that Honorable Bonjana is indicating? What are the constraints? Why can't you get this thing smooth? Because nutrition is so important for purposes of learning, especially for children who are under 14. Thank you.
I was concerned by the reference of the Financial and Fiscal Commission to Dennis Apportion to particularly this page 19 of the report, which says that expenditure trend data showed that per learner expenditure started at a low base, so most provinces spending less than the required minimum amount stipulated in the school funding norms. And then further down in the next paragraph, the end of the next paragraph, it says that a field survey conducted by the Commission in 2004 and 2005 on the provision of learner support materials for schools found that there was a significant shortage of stationery and textbooks, and this was more pronounced in secondary than primary schools. Now, quite clearly, this is a cause for concern. We haven't yet heard a response by the Education Department with regard to this input,
but one would certainly like to note one's concern and find out whether there are any reasons, legitimate or otherwise, why you know there's a shortage with regard to spending on stationery and textiles. Thank you.
Thanks, Shepard. Just a short clarification question. My recommendation on the financing of school infrastructure and educational outcomes, that effective coordination of training for school infrastructure, including connectivity, should be instituted with immediate effect. At which level should this be done for it to be really effective and feasible?
Thank you.
Thank you, Prof. With regard to the nutrition, the fact that you have discovered that there are no uniform norms and standards, I have discovered that provincially where I live, there are norms and standards for this program. But now, please inform us whether nationally you find that these are non-existent, because it says presently no uniform norms, which suggests that you have found that there are norms and standards there, but they are not uniformly
applied
across the board. And one other very worrying factor here is on slide 6. You say where necessary improvements in procurement procedures should be undertaken. This is a major point of concern for teachers, you know, and officials. In fact, you find that they speak in whispers when it comes to this kind of thing. Because apparently quite big names are involved here. What are your findings with regard to this particular thing?
Thank you, Chairperson. My glasses almost taken my question about uniformity. It was only that there is a problem really with uniform in schools, because the children are not getting the same. Others are getting soup and nourishing food in their school, yet others is only bread. What can the commission do about this?
The commission can comment on those comments.
Thank you, Chair. I won't attempt to answer all of them. Some of my colleagues will help with some of that. I think just for the first question on the questionnaire raised the issue as to is the commission ambiguous about whether it should be extended to secondary schools or not. Although that was our initial, it was one of our initial terms of reference, but other terms of reference was, you know, what is the, it was whether it's feasible, not so much that it should be, but is it feasible to do that, given the financing, given the conditions, given all the other aspects. And it was also, you cannot do an assessment without looking at what the current situation is. So what we did is to do an assessment of the current situation. Yes, we found that it is feasible. In other words, theoretically, you can extend it. But the Commission felt it would be unwise to do that until we resolve the problems that are in the system currently. And so the emphasis of our report in terms of the recommendation is that we recommend that we first tackle the problems that are making what was intended to be an important aspect of improving education outcomes, because the nutrition was to put in place, a scheme was put in place to improve education outcomes, especially at primary school level, where it's most important, because it's at the primary school level where children are learning the basics of education, numeracy, literacy, and other skills. And without good nutrition, those outcomes are a problem. So what we are saying, you know, yes, if there's funds available, we can extend and make sure that there's equity across the nutrition program. But of course, that will be dependent on the availability of funds. But most important, we felt that let us sort out the problems that we're currently facing. The issue of entrenching the system within the provincial education department, I will just make a comment and I will ask my colleague Chris to look at that issue in detail. Because this was a conditional grant and because it was initially implemented by the Department of Health, clearly in certain provinces and in certain education districts, there has not been complete buy-in. And I think that, you know, or the buy-in, the commitment has not been 100%. And maybe it's because of capacity issues, maybe it's because of administrative problems, or maybe it's because of other things. But I think my colleague can comment on that. The question from the Honorable Reverend was whether the Commission does have a mandate to actually look at that in terms of the Constitution. The issue is here, we were, in terms of the legislation, in terms of the IGFR Act and the FSC Act, the Commission has to, can be requested by any stakeholder to do and present a recommendation. And in this case, it was the Parliament who, we report to Parliament. And in this case, it was the Select Committee on Finance from the NCOP that actually requested that we undertake this kind of assessment. And, you know, they are our bosses, so we can't say no. but I think we clearly do have a mandate, but like I say, in implementing that request, we wanted to make sure that we still keep within the mandate of the equitable share. We have to assess conditional grants, we have to assess the equitable sharing mechanism, and this is a conditional grant. So we in terms of our mandate, it was quite clear that we had to do that. Again, the question about whether this should be part of the provincial equitable share or a conditional grant, you know, that's the... In some cases, people will prefer a conditional grant. In other cases, they will prefer part of the equitable share. The risk of putting it as part of the equitable share is that the equitable share is a discretionary amount. And we found that in many instances in some provinces that if there's no conditions attached to key policy objectives that have been stated in the national interest, like social welfare, social security grant, school nutrition program, if you put that in a discretionary fund, you risk not fulfilling the national objectives, a national policy objective. So our feeling is that for the Commission, it doesn't really matter because we can assess both and we can make recommendations on either. But I think there's strong merit in keeping some of the national objective targets within the conditional framework to achieve them, especially if they're short-term and medium-term targets. The question about whether the FSC can play a role in whether there's misadministration of the grants and so on, it's not really our function. That's a function of the Auditor General. We can raise it in our monitoring process, but we can, in the research we do, if Parliament asks us, the stakeholders, we can raise the problems. But I think then it's up to the... People always ask us this, and I say, well, that's the role of Parliament. It's not our role. You know, our role is to give you the information to make it, but it's up to Parliament as to whether you take it forward. We can't force government to do anything. We can only make recommendations, but Parliament is the body and the Auditor General that can deal with that. The issue of in the report itself, the question about implementation and the problems of implementation, There are many problems. We have a paper on this, which is in great detail, but in the main report we do highlight some of the problems there. So I would like to advise the honorable member that if they could just look at the report in detail, you will see some of the problems of the implementation that we highlighted. And we are putting out a volume early next year with the technical papers from the technical researchers who did some of this work. Chris, can I leave you to answer the LSM and the infrastructure connectivity issues there and some of the other issues?
Thanks, Jaya. I think Jaya has alluded to question one. He shed some light on it, on whether what were we saying. Were we saying that it should be extended or not? Should we be clear? I think Jaya has answered that one. So I'll go to the second one, where a question was raised about what we mean by entrenching the program. Yeah, basically, the way we conducted this study was that we did an empirical assessment on it. So we went to all the provinces. Actually, we didn't even take a sample. We went to all the provinces, and we also went to the National Department of Education. So we went to the 10 education departments. And I'm not going to mention the provinces, but what we found out in some of the provinces, it was mentioned that sometimes there was no serious commitment in terms of implementation of the National School Nutrition Program, because it was felt as if it was an add-on responsibility which was placed on the Department of Education, especially because of the fact that previously the program was with health, and normally there is a tendency to think that the main core business of education is to implement the curriculum. As you are all aware, you note that in the monitoring of this program, district officials are sometimes employed to go and check on the menus, to go and check on the implementation of the program. And it was mentioned that sometimes during exam period, like around this period, you find that district officials are instructed that they should concentrate on exams, as it is the core business of education. And you find that sometimes at times like this, you find that the monitoring is not happening as much as it should happen. And you know, the feeding of the kids has got also its own inherent risk. Yeah, you have to make sure that the food is safe and the prescribed menus are given to the learners, and also that it is nutritious, because in some places they give them fruit, here they give them protein, here they give them bread and soup and so on. And also you find that in certain provinces, you find that it is managed at chief director level. Then you go to this other province, you find the head of the program is a director. And then when you look at the budget and the beneficiaries, you see that there is some discrepancy. By suggesting that, we are not saying that provinces should do exactly the same thing, but we are concerned that we should have some kind of minimum standard. And also, we visited actually one school in the Eastern Cape where we went to see this program, how it is implemented. So you find that the kitchen has got the gas stove, and you find that it is smelling, the gas is smelling, and then they are cooking. They have got two pots to cook for 480 learners, so they have to cook. They take out the food, again they start cooking while the kids are waiting, and that takes a lot of time from learning. Yeah, you know, the learners are waiting for the food. They take like the hormone to get the meal. So by entrenching the program, we mean that they should adopt it fully, ensure that at least there are minimum standards in terms of kitchen, in terms of the number of personnel, and so on and so forth. We know that education is managing the program. But by doing some of these things, that is actually what we mean by saying that they should entrench and adopt the program fully. Then let me also just say one or two things. Yeah, there was a question. It was said that in the Eastern Cape and most provinces, why is the NSNP not running smoothly? Is it the funding or is it the mechanism? Actually, this is one of the reasons why we have said that if there are norms and standards at the national level, because the norms and standards, they always attempt or they provide some minimum to say that in the implementation of the program, this should be like this, and this should be like this. Kids must be fed at 10 o'clock, and then you should feed for 192 days, and then you should make sure that this happens and so on. So I think that if we had norms and standards, and the National Department of Education play the usual role that they play of monitoring. I think this could, in one or another, you know, assist in better implementation of the program. Then there was a question on school infrastructure. It was said that the planning and coordination, at which level should this happen? I think the provision of education, as it has always been, it has been mainly at provincial education department and also at national. So I think these are the two critical levels that should enhance the coordination and the coordination of that particular item. And also the Department of Education and Provincial Department, they are normally working together. They have got dedicated structures like the HEDCOM Subcommittee on Physical Infrastructure, where they meet and they share experiences, the challenges, the problems, and then they take them forward. So I think it is at national and provincial level where that coordination could take place. Then there was a question which was asked on the norms and standards. It was asked that there are norms and standards at national level. I think at the national level there are no norms and standards. At provincial level, there might be some policies and so on. But I think the norms and standards we are referring to are similar norms like the way we have in the education sector of norms and standards for school funding, which prescribe certain minimum requirements which provinces adhere to. So at national level, there are no minimum norms and standards to guide the NSNP. Procurement improvements, what were the findings? The findings were that in some provinces like Gauteng, they have taken a model whereby they take companies, they take like two big companies, and these big companies have contracts with SMMEs, and then they do the procurement via that mechanism. When you go to other provinces, they use refer to them as mothers. That they use, then the mothers, they go there, they go to cook, and so on and so forth. But I think the problem that we are losing towards at the level of tendering, when you go to tender for the contract, I think that is where there are problems. I think there are problems in some provinces that I don't want to mention. And then there was also a question, problem in schools. There was a question about the bread and the menus and so on. I'm aware that the National Department of Education, they have been working on this. Yeah, but I think the best way that we could suggest is that some of these issues are factored into the norms and standards, which might be developed in due course. From the FFP point of view, we are also concerned that you find that Selena preceding there, you find that the kids in KwaZulu-Natal is fed at 95 cents a day, Selena. And then when you go to Northern Cape or Gauteng, a kid is fed at 2 rand. So from the FFP point of view, these things have got secret implications because the South African child in the Northern Cape and in KwaZulu is the same child. So we are also concerned about this. And these things have been raised in the document. But I think these are matters that the education system can take forward.
Thank you, sir.
Just a question. I don't know in the past provinces like KZN, but not getting what the commission has recommended as the contribution. I'm not too sure what the position is now. If this has been corrected, to where the provinces are supposed to have been recommended by the commission. Because this now translates as he has put it out, that you find provinces treating their learners differently, which have got implications for equitable share. Wouldn't that go back to those years when those provinces were not getting their equitable share?
Thank you, Chair. I don't know if we can get retrospective payments, but I would claim for it if I did get it. You see, the nutrition program is a conditional grant, and the commission didn't make the recommendation. It's not based on a formula. So it was not the payment from school should be that this is a conditional grant. So I don't know how the provinces actually, whether they use a specific formula for the conditional grant. Maybe the Department of Education can indicate how each province uses and applies the principles. So this is why, if you have a conditional grant, there are conditions attached to it. If there are minimum standards, then of course, you know, you could say the minimum standard must be that you have 2 rand per child across the country from this conditional grant. And then on that basis, you can then say, well, what a conditional grant should be. But the conditional grants are paid from the Department of National Education to the provinces, and how the provinces then allocated their from. It doesn't come from the equitable share. But if a province is running short, there's nothing stopping them, like in the Northern Cape, from drawing on their own equitable share of their got spare funds in it, because that's a discretionary amount.
Thank you,
Mr. Yeah, no, I think the equitable share is based on the formula. We are going to review the mechanism. In fact, there is a project currently on how the equitable share should be reviewed and so on. And I think the equitable shares are based on population and on weighted for poverty and weighted for other factors. The big problem with the equitable share is that there's been much understanding, including in KZN, on certain departments. So if you have understanding, why should the argument from Treasury is that why should they get more money if they are not spending what they are currently getting? You see? So I think you're caught in that little bind. Yeah?
No, Prof. My concern is just based on the fact that the gentleman sometimes says, I don't want to mention the name of the province. I've spent some time, visiting schools and specifically, monitoring those who feel like
who's on the chair.
It could be some of the examples we are making are referring to that particular province. But we would like to identify these pockets where there are problems, as well as where there are pockets of excellence. We've got to identify. This is going to be very helpful in terms of, the mandate for doing constituency work and so on.
Thank you. I'll ask a few questions.
Yes.
Thank you. If I go back to slide 5, the recommendation is for the no fee schools. I would be surprised if any problem fits anybody without starting there, but by that very nature, those would be the poorest of the poor. That's what the discussion for. But then if I go to make an example for my problem, which sometimes worries me about conditional grants. Theoretically, when I say conditional grants, there are something is the budgeting for that conditional is based on some need. That is, this province has given this learner because it has given the learner nationally, I'm going to give it general. Based on some norm that it is fitting 192 days a year. I would assume that that is something that is given. But you go to the Eastern Cape, as we project the engineer from the department, when the eight provinces are fitting up to grade 7, the Eastern Cape is the only province that stops at grade 4. And now you end up asking the question, is it because it does not have the necessary funding? If the funding is a conditional based on the number of kids, how is it possible that the province is only fitting up to grade 4 while everybody is fitting up to grade 7? If I put my A in the cap now again, we are now going to the next concept. What we are saying as a commission, let's hold our horses. Let us sort out the math first before we go to secondary. But they are also saying you have a question, problem of traffic. Same kid, same family, coming to school. And my concern with your approach, which is based on funding or whatever, it is as though we will be able to sort out this problem before we address the traffic. Part of the approach, important thing, fund or no fund. Let us say, let us feed these kids up to grade 12 if they are in need. Because when you talk about, for example, there is no fee school, they have nothing to do with whether they are grade 12 or grade. They look at the community. And this is basically what we are trying to put in. And naturally, when we talk feeding, we are not talking about this as much as fee school, so my attractive goal. By the very nature, it goes to this poverty. So out of how I wish the commission on its accommodation shall not put the budget cap. It says equity, kids from the same home, going to school, therefore they must be fair. Whether we sort out the total, part of what we do as a department or as a politician. I'm going to slide 7. I have loved the commission to remind us about those minimum requirements. But one gets a key effect that there are already some minimum requirements kind of conditions, which some are meeting, some are not meeting, which becomes our responsibility now as politicians. Decency, potency, how dare you? Or if you even ask the question from Decency current, that it is fitting out to grade 4, could we assume that it is that going out to the given limit? Is that the minimum that is given there? If I go to slide they are saying these provinces must supplement. While I agree with that, to me I would rather take that more than add on. It's more of an outside plea. We are taking that part and please do. But if I go to the field part, I need us to be able to say, when I say, at least that which needs to be done should be done. If I could say, for example, I have a very serious problem in my constituency and I'm about to move around school. Again, I think it was a long time when the commission went to the Eastern Cape and they found those two ports. But now they have done away with ports, and that is the plan. And what is worse about that bread that they are getting? Those people who deliver bread, because the food government put the seed, they're not part of the program. So the supplier of bread has a contract to deliver bread every day before 10. But what do they do? They deliver the bread only once a week. Mm-hmm. That once a week could be healthy.
Yeah.
And when they get there on Thursday, they deliver, if it's 50 loaves per day, it will be 50 for Monday, 50 for Tuesday, 50 for Wednesday, and 50 for Thursday. And the SDP and the Princess of you, they are expecting last before this bill would come, was signing for 5 or 4 days. When the doctor said you were supposed to say, I'm not signing for Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday, I'm only signing for the rules of Thursday. So that the supplier is not paid for Monday, Tuesday and Wednesday. So that following week, he comes every day. But the LCD figures, they don't know what's happening. They're not part of it. They were very anxious that they're not getting any bread. Suddenly they get it. What they do? They divide among themselves. Teachers, everybody, teachers of whom? And that is reality. That is what is happening on the ground. When we talk about infrastructure again, some of us are coming from provinces like Eastern States. You hear the president in 2004 saying no more structure. You go to Bizana now, and this is the schools there have been thrown down by storms, there's nothing. And as far as mass structure, the pronouncement of the president of 2004 has not started running. And you find that that is happening. Whatever the efficacy formula is, this is affecting those poor provinces who had all those mass structures. And one wonders, is the efficacy formula comparing Western states and Eastern states and saying Western states, there are no fashion mass structures. Therefore, since this one has these mass structures, it means 5-10 billion. What do we do about it? Nobody does anything, but in the morning, on a day to day to day, sorry for morning, but I'm morning children.
To the wrong people.
But I'm saying it's good, for example, when the committee is bold in its non-partisan objective to look at things. Forget about the budget. Forget about if we are going to meet ABC, this is what needs to happen. In your slide 11, I was not sure, for example, that when I'm back up at that table, that's the example. I was not sure whether that is the assignment of the education department of finance. Who is supposed to be able to? Because can show state and the chamber allocations of revenue shares in the then program, particularly Professor Taylor, to aim for stable budget growth and over 7-8 reform. On our side, I think we need to assist the committee coming with a clearer kind of a spot on saying this is stable. And we take our whatever weapon we have and say, department, we are giving you a 6 months or a year. In 6 years' time, this is what needs to happen. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I must say, you never cease to amaze me because you always maintain the level of compassion and commitment that I've known you for. And having said that, I want to also say to you that many of the points you raised, I think as a commission we are concerned about that, but we do have we could go and make statements and say things, but I think it would be remiss of us to do that given the fact that chapter 13, 2 and 4 of the Constitution says we should take into account a list of conditions before making our recommendations. And under that, it's listed under A to J of that. So when we make that in section 220, it's very clear that the Commission can only make recommendations taking into account those conditions. And so what we try to do then is to try and balance the requirements of the Bill of Rights on the one hand. And this is why Mr. Van Kraft raised the issue of progressive realization, because the Bill of Rights says you need to provide these things. Some of them, I remember in the early days there was a big debate between the First Minister of Education and others about whether the Bill of Rights for Education was preemptive right. In other words, it didn't have to be realized progressively, but had to be granted unconditionally at the outset. But we didn't want to get involved in that debate. But we say there are certain rights that children have in the Bill of Rights. But in Section 214, it says that some of these things, provinces need to have the fiscal capacity, they need to operate efficiently, they need to operate effectively, etc. And those things are listed there. And we need to take those into account when we do make our recommendations. And I think, we could say, yes, extend this thing because it's feasible. You can go ahead and extend it to everybody. But I think it's the role of Parliament and MPs. If the norm is that nutrition should be provided up to grade 7, and some provinces are only providing it up to grade 4, I think then it's up to Parliament and the legislature to ensure that those governments are actually implementing that norm. Because it's a condition, it's a conditional grant, and if it's a condition and the government is not fulfilling its condition, then I don't think it's the Commission who can do that. That's not our job. It's the role of the MPs, it's the role of the legislators to go and say, you guys are not fulfilling your task here. This condition says you should do this. I know the Department of Education, we interact very closely with the Department of Education, and I know they are absolutely frustrated at the flagrant disregard of the conditions. I was at a budget lahotla in the Drakensberg recently where the Minister of Education talked about her frustration at the flagrant disregard of certain conditions by provinces with respect to implementing some of these minimums. There are some minimum standards there. Like we say, you have to feed the children up to grade 7. Why then do you feed them up to grade 4? And then the argument is that the conditional grant is not enough. But when we do an assessment, and when the department does an assessment of the conditional grant, the money, there's a leakage, there's a hemorrhage of the funds in other directions. And then you ask yourself, is this about efficiency or is it about underfunding? Is it about effectiveness or is it about underfunding? And I think, the Commission's view has been underpinned by several reports from the Auditor General and from other groups who have been monitoring this process. But I think maybe the Department of Education can respond to some of those issues. But I think it's important for the legislators to actually say, these people need to be brought, if it's criminal neglect, then I think people need to be brought to book, But, as a commission, we can't say, because, I would be irresponsible as a commissioner to say, extend this to secondary school when I know that there are problems that need to be resolved first. It would be, I could do that, but as a commissioner, I'm supposed to be independent, impartial, and I'm not supposed to be political. So, since I'm not seeking political office, I don't need to be popular, but I need to say the facts as they are there. And I think for me, that's what the most important point that we need to emphasize at this stage. Chair, some of the other points you make are quite key and quite important, but I'll ask my colleagues if they want to say some of them.
Just the first one. Chairperson, the minimum number of prescribed days is 156 according to the Cabinet Memorandum. And
156.
Yeah, 156 and according to the Conditional Grant Framework. However, in a particular calendar year, not say financial year, a calendar year from January to December, depending on the configuration of holiday, kids need to be fed by between 192 days to 198. Because some holidays come on Saturday. And it depends on when they close and when they open. So if you have to feed... Okay, let me come quite slowly. What has been prescribed is that at least need learners, deserving learners, should be fed in a school year for a minimum of 156 days. Minimum.
In a common language, how many days in a week?
What some provincial education departments do is that sometimes they feed them maybe 4 days in a week. Some of them, they might feed them the full week, but at the end of the year, they may not feed them for a few weeks. So it depends on how they do it. But what I've been asked is that from January to December, they should feed them for a minimum of 156 days. But if they were to feed them for all the school days from January to December, it means that they should cover between 192 days and 198 days, depending on how the holidays come.
Jane, respecting your questions on slides 15 and 11 about the stability of budget growth bonds and why this happens, I think with respect to FET, ABBA, TTD, smaller programs, part of it is due to them being fairly new and the system not being entrenched. I think the education departments are well, have been built up around the provision of public ordinary school education, and in a sense the other programs are perhaps seen as add-ons. I think as well that within the provincial education department, it's likely that the first priority public ordinary school is the payment of teachers. If there are any shocks or changes in the total education department, the programs that are in fact absorbing those shocks are smaller ones like FET and ABBA and so on. So part of the if the finance officials in the education departments were to use the criteria of looking at growth rates over the past 3 years and comparing them against the next 3 years, and if they saw this very volatile growth part, that would be, if you like, a warning light to them to question those particular budgets. I think in the first instance, it's the finance officials within the provincial education department, then the budget analysts in the provincial treasury, and I guess at a higher stage, at the national treasury and national department. But I think that it's primarily at the provincial level where those who evaluate the budget should take note of that particular criteria. And I think in some sense also it's entrenched almost because they are minority programs within the education department. They're not a focus.
Why don't they cross over to the department? The department is the donor policy on MSP. And some of the recommendations here are specifically in black and white. National department, if I look at the at number 5, for example, it says national department, do it. National department, do it. Go to the Native and store the funding. And these are specific to, and so on and so on. It will become easy. The commission is putting these on the table of the department. The department has to be indicating, are these fast sites? Are we going to, after this, as a committee, trying to be behind you and saying there was a proposal? If I can go, for example, to slide 13. Every department service level room should be defined and all the is this something that the department can do? People to apply for the payment of dollars to the military funding in the government capital, like it is. I'm saying the I would imagine the commission has done its part. It is putting this before the department. Is the department seeing which way it could be on saying, say they will think about the maybe to
thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Just once again, apologies for the minister and the DG. Honorable Chairperson, I think the format of the presentation has developed in such a way that we have prepared a presentation indicating the recommendation from the FSC and then giving our comment on it. But I'm not sure if I try and take you through that now. I think we need you to think anew. And following the discussion, the trend of the discussion until now, perhaps just hatch on and continue, because the presentation has been distributed and it's still free for anybody to read or to raise questions on it.
I think you have to say something.
We have Honorable Chairperson and we have distributed copies as well.
Oh.
But I'm not going to stay in the background, but to follow the line of the discussion, the trend of the meeting, Honorable Chairperson. Let me start by saying I think mostly we agree with the recommendations of the FSC. I think there are some issues, like indicated by yourself a few minutes ago, that we possibly need to further discuss and to further clarify and give an indication. But in general, I think that the report of the FSC actually strengthens our hand in our negotiations with National Treasury. And as I will also indicate in our presentation, that most of these areas are also the priority areas that we have indicated to National Treasury for additional funding for the new MTS cycle. Perhaps just, Honorable Chairperson, to latch on to the last comment made by yourself in terms of norms and standards. Let me start with that one and say, of course, there's always a challenge with that one from the side of National Treasury, because as soon as you make it a hard norm or a hard standard, it means that the funding thereof is not negotiable. So National Treasury would always find the approach to say, let us rather make it a target than try and move there in time. But if you say today there's a hard norm that school nutrition must be 2 rand a day, all these limits and so forth, you can go do a calculation and commit a fixed amount of money, which may not be there present, and that is part of the challenge. So the approach from National Treasury would normally be to say, let us make it a target and try and move there. Then I think something that has also come up from the discussion, Honorable Chairperson, is to say, if today we have 1 rand and tomorrow we have 2 rand, do we immediately have the capacity in education to spend that 2 rand? And I think it is a fair question, and it has remained a challenge. What we've been trying to do for the last number of years, and perhaps I can use the FEC College Recapitalization Program just as an example, is to say in year one, give us a small amount of money that we can actually try and get our planning perfect and all in place, that from year two, you really bring the bigger money and you can implement the program in a good way. And to continue with the FET College Recapitalization Program, 2 years ago was actually the planning year and the small amount that came. And we thought our planning was excellent. And when year one came last year, we were still struggling with the big bulk of funds that then came in year one of the real program. And we made very good progress, and better than with many other things that happened in the past. but he still struggles in year one. Now this year is year two of the bulk of money, and we really see that the FET, the capitalization program, is now running smoothly, and the machinery is working. We are thinking along the same lines of another big initiative that is coming in terms of the literacy program, and there has already been approval for that in last year's NTS process. But we are trying to follow the same pattern. To say this year we need to develop the material for the learners, we need to get our planning correct, and from next year the big money must actually start slowly in terms of implementation. Honorable Chairperson, let me jump directly into the school nutrition program. There are many, many challenges. Of course, there are also very good success stories of where things are working, and very often we don't speak about them. We only concentrate on the challenges. Of course, it's also correct to concentrate on the challenges because we need to be continuously improving. What is it that we after? Let me back jump there and then come back and look at our thinking back on it. As indicated by the FSC report, the program needs to be extended from what is being offered at present. And we have therefore put forward a bid to National Treasury for the new MTS, which I think is an optimistic bid when we look at the available funds, because we basically asking that from next year, can we double the amount of money that comes into this program? Now, I personally think we're a little bit unrealistic with that, because in terms of the bigger framework of government and the available funds, new money within government, and then of course all the requests that flow in from the various departments, I think we are very over optimistic if we think we'll get approval for our full bid. But we are positive that we're going to receive a substantial additional amount of money. What Mr. Bowa indicated is correct to say that when the NSMP was taken to cabinet many years ago, it did say there are 356 days a year. Now, 156 days a year is just about three quarters of school days in a year. But it's not even half of calendar days in a year. Because you can still ask the question, what happens outside of a school day? And you have a long December holiday for 4 weeks to those children just go hungry during the period. It is true, Honourable Chairperson, that yes, in some provinces still they are only feeding, and the Chairperson mentioned that in his province, up to grade 4. And we always ask the question in-house, if we have a brother and a sister from the same house, in the same primary school, not even secondary school, in the same primary school, and the one child is in grade 3 and the other one is in grade 5, and you feed the one, you don't feed the other one. The humanity around that. So this program definitely does need some kind of additional input into it. What we are aiming at, let me start with a different point in time. The program does not concentrate on poverty. And I think this is going to become a bigger issue in terms of our education system, because it's based on equity. And if we look at what equity was in 1995, when this formula was adopted, it spoke to numbers, headcount. It said this problem, there are so many numbers, that problem. That was the very first workshop of Professor Bengu when he became the Minister of Education at the end of 1994, was to precisely look at that issue and say, we have this former 19 education departments, and we throw all these pieces into a basket, and now we have 9 provinces, and we must divide equally. But it does not take poverty into account. And that's part of the challenge. And that was immediately hatched onto the norms and standards. We said very early on there must be norms and standards in education. We have these 5 quintiles from the poorest to the next poorest. and you say the poorest 20% is in quintile 1, and the next poorest is in quintile 2. When we started back then, 10 years ago, we said provinces determine your quintile. So every province took their learners and put them into quintile 1, 2, 3, 4. So 20% of the learners in a province was in quintile 1, from 21 to 40% in quintile 2, but not looking at poverty across the system in the country, looking at poverty only in the province. Now, Mr. Patel may come in now, who's responsible for the planning in the National Department, the GDP for planning. But he has now the minister has implemented, he assisted with the development of national quintiles. To say we take all schools in the country, and now we determine the 20% poorest school. But Honourable Chairperson, we have a critical thing that we need to understand. Shouldn't we look at national quintiles and not what's happening only in a province? Suddenly you'll find in Eastern Cape, for example, where Eastern Cape, when they have their own provincial quintile, 20% learners in quintile 1, another 20% in quintile 2. Suddenly now you find 60 or 70% of the schools and the learners in quintiles 1 and 2. And the challenge is how will the money eventually follow this issue? Because now we're starting to see poverty and not health. And this is critical. It's really critical. I think the thing that goes with that is that in terms of quintile 2 and quintile 3, there's almost no difference in terms of poverty of the learners or the community. There may be just a different kind of access run to the school. As a factor that's taken into account and moves the school to the higher quintile. But the issue of the learners and the poverty within the community, there may not be a major difference. Now looking at the, coming back to the school nutrition program, Honorable Chairperson, it is something that we inherited from the Department of Health. We took over from them. And when money came the first time, they tried to address in some way needy learners. And we said we must first take over this program, dirty our hands with it and understand it properly before we can start trying to change it or amend it. And the plans were that a year ago start affecting serious changes to it. What happened is that a year ago the demarcation came of problems. And then you started complicating a formula. So a year ago, for this financial year, in other words, we said, let us first just deal with the demarcation and the effect of that has across provinces. And where schools have moved that were being fed in one province, let us ensure that the money moves to the new province who is now a father of these schools. And we dealt with the re-demarcation in 2007-8. We now have serious plans in place, and I will tell you now what they are, for implementation from 2008-09, from next financial year. And we have many options available. How far we can go with implementation will depend on what money we receive. We have the existing money. We have the existing money and we can continue to feed the learners that currently benefit from the scheme. But if we want to improve it, we may need more money. Because even if a school fell in a province in quintile 1 or 2 and now it falls in terms of national quintiles in 3 or 4, and people that are, or learners that are being fed at the moment, do you now take them out of the scheme? Or do you leave them there, but you bring the other deserving ones into the scheme? That's the one challenge. The second one is to ensure that at least all 198 school days of the year, learners are safe. To move towards that and ensure that. The third one is to ensure that all learners in all provinces up to grade 7 are actually safe, and that you don't stop feeding in their school at grade 4. Fourthly, the average across the country of the price of the meal at present is 1.22. That's the average across the country. And some provinces are feeding way below that, below 1 rand, and other provinces may be feeding at 2 rand. So the fourth thing we want to do is to at least increase that average value of the meal by about 20% or something, to at least be an average of 1.50. If we can go beyond that to 1.80 or 2 rand, we will appreciate it even more. And then, honorable chairperson, the next step would then be to say, can we move into secondary school and start feeding quintile 1, then quintile 2, and so forth in secondary schools as well. So we have all these different things worked out, and it's going to depend on what additional money comes into this conditional grant, new money, beyond the existing baseline allocation. How far can we take it, and over the NTF cycle, how can we proceed forward? Something that the minister has also raised in discussion around the feeding time. Would it not be wonderful if we can have something at 7 o'clock in the morning and something again at lunchtime? Will that not assist to ensure that learners come to school early in the morning and attend classes and attend classes until school comes out? But that means 2 meals a day, which may pose its own challenges. But I'm just trying, honourable chairperson, to give you an idea of the thought that's going into it and the way the minister is thinking about it. And I'm sure the minister will make some announcements as soon as we know what is available and how far we can go. There's also been some discussion around the fact whether it should be a conditional grant or not. I think, honourable chairperson, at this stage, we would appreciate it to remain as a conditional grant. That the money is absolutely earmarked and it's ring-fenced and it flows to provinces. Questions have also been raised around monitoring and evaluation. Part of the new thinking is to say that rather than 6 to 7% of this grant should go into monitoring and evaluation, because we think it is much better supervision. Some of the things that the honourable chairperson, as example, mentioned, it can actually be monitored and the school can be supported and so forth to ensure that delivery takes place on a daily basis as intended and the food is fresh and all of that. We are actually working with Department of Health, honourable chairperson, to look at the nutrition values of the different options that can be given as meals to the learners. So that is a continuous process. But there is also very often discussion around a service provider delivering meals, perhaps delivering bulk supplies, and the community cooking meals or whatever. The other option is still some very good success stories around food gardens, but that's not practical all over across the country because it also relies on a number of other issues, for example, the availability of ground to grow the garden, water, the kind of soil, many other things. In preparing hot meals there, it depends also again on the available facilities. Do you need to actually go and build a kitchen and whatever? It's a lot of things, so it's difficult to try and have one formula to say one shoe or one size fits all. It must, and therefore, in a way, we have to work with the provinces. There are teams working together and trying to find the recipe that works best for a province, and even you could have different models within that province depending on the circumstances of different schools and so forth in the province. But that there are challenges and more work needs to be done, definitely. If we take a province like the Eastern Cape that is being in the headlines a lot now and saying delivery is not taking place, I don't think it's because there's no money or there's no program or whatever. I think it's other alleged issues that are paying for and that have forced the powers in the province to perhaps stop these for very deliberate reasons or investigations or whatever could be happening. But it's not so much the system as such, but perhaps how it is being implemented out there. That's why I must pause on the school nutrition program and just continue a little bit. Let me just go through some of the notes that I made here. I just give an idea of, I mentioned that to say we basically doubled our request for this grant, and we are very optimistic in doing so. But the actual figure is that we requested 1,079,000,000, as you can see on page 6 of our slide, additional for 2008 and then for 9-10, it grows again, and for 10-11, it grows again. And it will address some of the issues that we have mentioned. I think on the school infrastructure, if necessary, Mr. Patel can speak more specifically to that. But it may be necessary to now indicate that the new National Education Infrastructure Management System, or let's call it the old word of the school register of needs, has now basically been finalized. There's one or two cleaning up things still happening, and the register is there, which speaks to the whole country. So you can, at a national level, you can look at the needs. But a very interesting one I thought I must perhaps just mention to the House Honourable Chairperson is that we sometimes speak of mud structures, and we hear when there's heavy downfall in some provinces, some of these mud schools collapse and so forth. The other interesting one is that a minister actually went to go and break down a mud structure, and then the mud structure was built so strong that they basically couldn't hit the part with a big hammer. And what is interesting what comes from this is that some of these much structures are actually very, very strong, while others are. On the LPSM learning and teaching support material, perhaps Honourable Chairperson, we just need to say we have an education, a shared definition for LPSM. It is the textbooks and the stationery for learning. And then, of course, there are teacher materials like the teacher's guide, and there need to be blackboards and chalk and so forth. So we do have a clear definition of that. Furthermore, within the budget structure for education, we have standardized the budget or the vote structure for education in all provinces, their vote. Uses the same program and the same item code and so forth, and there is a separate allocation for LPSM. That does not make spending on LPSM good. It is also something that is still continuously being investigated, because at this time now, for this year, we spent over 3 billion rand on LPSM. And we still hear stories of learners that don't have complete set of textbooks for all their learning areas or subjects in a specific grade. And we've also been doing our own calculations. Now, it's fine, Honorable Chairman, you asked me, it's fine to know this, what are we doing about it? In our MTF inputs to National Treasury, we are requesting specifically fund for national supply of textbooks for grades 10, 11, and 12 for 2009, 10, and 11 as a pilot project. And there's a lot of interaction with National Treasury on the issue because they are saying the supply of LTSM is a provincial competency. It's not a national function to go and buy textbooks and deliver down there in the school. And of course they are also correct in that assumption. On the other hand, we want to see what can we manage and negotiate from a national level. And we've learned a lot through the so-called recovery plan after the strike action of June. What we, for example, learned through that exercise was that a textbook that is on the shelf for 144 rand, when we said as part of the recovery plan, we want that book and we want so many copies of it so that we can provide it nationally, we did not pay 144 rand, we paid 30 rand. For the same book, which is major. Now, what we are trying to do with this request to National Treasury, we're saying we want to take a cohort of learners, a cohort of learners that will be in grade 10 in 2009, and provide them with 100% textbooks from a national level. And the next year, 2010, when they move to grade 11, do the same again, and the same when they move to grade 12, and perhaps see what the impact of that will be on the system. We'll take that cohort, we'll provide 100% tuition, go through. Again, Jefferson, I'm sharing with you the idea, which is a hard proposal that the Minister signed off on and has been submitted to the Minister of Finance and to National Treasury, but we are awaiting the outcome of the financing thereof. We need to accept that we know it's part of the normal process. But if it is approved, then we are working on national catalogs for different grades. We are right down from grade 12 to grade 10, and we want to still go further. To say instead of having a catalog of 100 or 200 books, and you say to every school, you can choose your own books from them. What are the best books? The best 1, 2, 3 books. For a specific subject in a specific grade. And if you can reach that point, then you also create greater certainty with the publisher so that they can possibly print books in advance and have it ready, which assists with the economy of scale, it assists with better planning, and which then hopefully we'll be able to do more with the money that is already inside the system. Of course, there's also economic implications that need to be taken into account, serious economic implications that could be there, and that is part of the whole discussion that must take place in our consideration. Because what are you going to do with booksellers at this stage? Are you going to work only directly with publishers? Are you going to work with booksellers? Are you going to deal through booksellers? The profit margin and a number of things. Because the example that I used with the recovery plan was to go directly to the publishers and say, we want so many copies of this book, it's a crisis situation, we need it now, we need to give it to our learners. It was justified. Once you get into a normal cycle, there could be other factors that need to be taken into account and that could have a serious impact. It's not something that can just be decided very quickly.
We can sometimes check what you are saying and see what the commissioner is saying at part 8. At 8, you are saying everything is fine, education and sex, and then I think it's already there.
It is already there on the administration. Already being defined, LTSM for the learners, it means textbooks and stationery, and for the teachers, it means the teacher's guide. As well as other, can I say, classroom equipment that must be there, like a blackboard and chalk and so on.
I think some of us, we all use college, and we assume it. So there will be something new in what you're saying. although you did not speak at that time, you have fallen into it.
Which century was that?
60s and
70s. The Nauti school policy, not very much to much of it about that previously, of course, of Mr. Patel can come in on that as well, if necessary. But just for the committee to note that we're now working on the national norms and standards, and the schools then determined from a national level. We are perhaps not saying it's perfect yet, and it may need refinement here and there, but it is policy, it is gazetted by the minister, the school's names are actually there to say you are classified as East Wind Down. Perhaps the challenge still comes back to the funding side, as I mentioned earlier on, that the first funding distribution was based on equitable share headcount. Now you're moving towards quality, and the effect of that on the system, I think need some further study before there can just be some recommendation to implement. I'm not sure the FFC may look at that in the future yet. It could be an important issue. Honorable Chairperson, quite a bit was said around the stability of funding at high tech
levels. On the North East School, you started curious about the warm body utilization. And when you get on the ground, you find that these schools are substantially defined. Maybe these ones, Akindan ones, that year, these are Akindan schools. And everybody is moaning on the ground. I don't know this one boy who actually decides which one is wrong where. When you look at the school, you find that you don't have to ask anything to see that these schools are very hungry. But check them, they are Akindan schools.
That 100% right, Honorable Chairperson, and Mr. Patel will speak to that. Perhaps just to hatch on to that, something I forgot to say when I spoke about the school nutrition program. Part of our plan is also to say, how can this program be extended to quintile 3? I did mention earlier on that there's very, very little difference between quintile 2 and 3. And it may more have to do with the infrastructure than with the poverty of the community. And therefore, at this stage, no fee school may be up to quintile 2. If we receive sufficient funding, we'd like to see the feeding scheme move at least to quintile 3. Again, it will depend on the outcome of our FDS request. On the funding, Honorable Chairperson, it is correct that we need stability in education funding. One or two things that when we worked with Treasury and also looked at it, we found that in the first 10 years of our democracy, there could have been only in total 1% growth in real terms in terms of education funding, which means 0.1% per year on average, which is nothing. Essentially, you take into account how much you address backlogs and the whole inequitable way that education was run by the old regime. So it posed a serious challenge that on average over a 10-year period, you would basically just receive what you had inherited from the old regime plus inflation and nothing for real growth. I think it's important to note that something has started to change. And from this year, we actually started to see real growth. And I think even in the previous year approved MTF, which is now our new baseline for this year, the next 2 years, you can see a pattern of some real growth coming into education. And we really appreciate that. And what we are requesting additionally now will even go beyond that. So I think we are not there. That's not what I'm trying to say. I'm saying I think for the first time now, almost education is also being taken seriously financially, and we see some real growth coming into it that will assist us to address some of the issues.
These half measures are not helping anyone. You know, just last week, a school that was about a month ago was classified as quintile one school. It has received a circular. Said, no, you are now quintile three. What an arbitrary. Now, many principals out there are really, you know, I don't know if you need to tell me, chaos. But really, in a rural area, can you realistically talk about different quintals, quintal one, two, three? There are no rich schools in the rural area. Why don't you just say feeding scheme, all schools? Because really, sir,
the norm is wrong, of this content. The norm.
Huh? What is happening? Can you really have to
carry it? The norm.
Maybe this is a kind of blame the Quintal is that, because all they are saying that Quintal was supposed to be Quintal was that. That's the thing I was asking. When you are facing that problem, that state will come from somebody who decided on some basis. Can you as a politician be able to follow this up? Who decides it or what? Because remember, when we were dealing with Sindhar, we used to teach kids how to stop. And we are no longer doing that. Because currently, the department is going to put a huge 4.3 million schools in the rural area. So it is not done that area, the basis of that school, not by the department. Hence, it did away with Sindhar. You take who is in part. But the question is, who does that? I mean, the problem is not the Quintal itself. Because the Quintal is good. It is the formula that is used for funding. But if it is interpreted incorrectly, it's not the Quintal, it is good in part.
To the end of what I just wanted to offer as an initial presentation. What I did wanted to say still around the funding is that there are certain things that affect the funding comparison between years if you just look at it coldly, you need to take it into account. Again, you perhaps use the example of the FET College's recapitalization program. We are speaking 1.9 billion rand over 3 years. But it's actually a project, a one-off project, and when the recapitalization process is completed, we trust we'll have new FET colleges that are functioning, but within existing funding, because there's always been FET college funding, but they've never been recapitalized. So this is a kind of an injection to recapitalize, to see if you have the correct staff and equipment and offer the correct program, and it's like a one-off project. And you should actually omit it when you draw a comparison of normal operating budget from year on year on year for the future. So those kinds of things we need to possibly take into account. The last thing I mentioned wanted to indicate, Honourable Chairperson, is on slides 19 and 20. You just perhaps look at that and say, on page 19 we are speaking about education sector priorities, because we have priority areas for our national department, but then we have the sector priority areas. But we actually mean that it's still one education system. But when we want funds to flow through the national department, or we want it to flow into the system in one way or another, which could also be by a national term of a conditional grant, but it's more for sending out sectors. And we look at those sector priorities, we have the infrastructure, the non-personnel, non-capital resourcing of public ordinary schools. We have the inclusive education and special schools. We have universal grade R, and we have the personnel for ordinary public school system. These priority areas have all been approved by CEN, the Council for Education Ministers, and have been submitted to the Minister of Finance by the National Minister, and there was also a MINCOM Ministerial Budget Committee meeting that actually took place last week where they were also discussed. So they're in process. What the outcome will be, and depending on the availability of funds, we do not know at this stage, Honorable Chairperson. And then what we are saying through the National Department, we have the FET Colleges and Recapitalization Program, but it needs the IT side of it needs to be refined and connected. We are requesting money for that. I did mention to the Honorable Members the national procurement of grade 10 textbooks in 2009 and taking that cohort through grade 10, 11 and 12. The school nutrition program, we spoke much about that. Here are the figures that we requested from National Treasury. And then the last one is a bit of a small thing. It's just that some additional funding for some of our public entities like SACWA and Mambuti and so forth. And haven't received any budget adjustment for some years. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Can I just ask Mr. Patel to just add one or two things?
Thank you, Chair. Good afternoon, members. Firstly, I think that in terms of the overall recommendations of the FFP, they can be divided into a number of issues. Some of them are managerial issues. Some of them are technical issues, which in the course of our systems improvement, we will be able to accommodate those because they're within our power. And some of them are data issues, Chair, and I think we welcome the FFC in terms of the forum that that they participate with us to make those particular proposals. Some of the data issues that they mentioned, are available, as the CFO has indicated. For example, the number of classrooms, etc. Our own publications give that out. So I think that's taken care of. But I think, Chair, the fundamental issue, and you asked the question of what is it? What is at the root of the problem? And how is it that the FSC is able to recommend to us how to deal with the issue of the problem? And clearly, the issue is, if you look at the last table on page 15 of the FSC, is that education budgets have not really been treated fairly. In spite of the issue that for the last few years that we have seen them. Just that the provincial education departments have grown in real terms, provincial governments have grown in real terms by 4.13%. Education has grown by 2.1%. And public ordinary school, that's what we're talking about, has really also grown at that level of 2.8%. And we have spent the money. Public education. In other words, our over expenditure has been 0.52%. Taking the 5% benchmark of the auditor generally into account, that is exceptional in terms of the amount of funds. But if you look at provincial money, their real growth has been 4.1%, but their performance in terms of over expenditure has been 2.25%. So clearly, the money in the provinces, they're not spending, and it's not coming to education. By and large, in terms of the last program. Chair, I think the other issue, and the FFC probably says it, but doesn't say it loud enough, is the issue that 51% is the indicative share, as one of the members has spoken about. It's not a guideline for the FFC, it's not a requirement, it's just a basis of the allocation. because at some point in time it was decided that 51% is what an educational function should be utilizing. Provinces don't want to reorganize those particular matters. See, tomorrow I'm actually presenting on the PBER to the Select Committee. And the issue is, out of the 51%, if you look over the MTEF, is that we're looking at a smaller and smaller shareholder value. Now, as I indicated, it's not a budget decision, but if I could just go to the idea of what I'm thinking for me. So, for example, in 2003, education received 45.7% of the 51%. And we would say that in terms of the indicative and the comparable. In other words, we're saying, because provinces do have some leeway in terms of the allocation, but what we're saying is that if we were true to ourselves and sort of thing, that is what we meant as a nation to say our education expenditure should be 41%. Why is it that across the board in provinces, that from 45.7% in 2003, then in 2009-10 we moved to 42%. And in some of the provinces, the situation is much worse, especially Eastern Cape, Limpopo, and KwaZulu-Natal are receiving far below what's left. So, firstly, there's that particular issue. Now, the FSC can address it, but I mean, I think they have acknowledged it. Some way, if you read their documentation nicely, they acknowledge it, but 9.1, it should have been lifted up. In a sense, it takes a very acute reader to be able to look at those particular findings of the FSC. But I'm saying that this change is a fundamental problem. So we can deal with other managerial issues, as the FSC has said that some of these are managerial issues we can deal with, or the Auditor General can deal with it. Chair, on the no-fee schools also, I mean, I think the FFC didn't make a presentation, but the document really says quite a bit. It acknowledges that it has been a great move that we have made. It also draws concerns around whether or not we're setting the schools up for failure in terms of the adequacy. And we have also raised that issue both with Cabinet and with the President's Coordinating Committee in terms of drawing the attention that provinces are still battling to make those amounts. There's still an inequality. This report, Chair, the provincial budget expenditure review, shows the amount of gross inequity in education, from the educator ratios to infrastructure to school nutrition to whatever else. And so, clearly, we're hoping that some of the further work that the FSC is going to do is going to be able to tackle it, especially in reviewing the formula. We had also indicated that education is the only function provincially that has national non-descendants that are poverty related, but yet the funding that goes to the provinces is not. Health automatically is poverty related because it counts the number of people in medical aid and not on medical aid. So, if there's a province where nobody is on medical aid, they will get a big share of the funds. Whereas in education, we only count the enrollment and we count the population without taking the circumstances into account. We have been pushing provinces to say you have a 3% component in the FSC, the poverty component. And we've been saying, show us what are your poverty expenditure in your provinces. Social welfare is taken care of. Health is loaded in terms of poverty. So there is an area in which, I think the Eastern Cape one comes up to about 500 million rand, that 3% is equal to, which clearly can deal with the issues of infrastructure, etc. Just a question on quintiles. As you rightly pointed out, that we must agree to divide our nation up socioeconomically and in the society. Now, clearly, we recognize that there is a big difference between quintile 1, 2, and 3, and therefore our funding. If we look at the curve, in our funding norms, there are also very slight differences between quintile 1, 2, and 3. The big difference really comes about in quintile 5, where there's a big gap. Secondly, I think, as committee is aware, we have changed that from provincial quintiles to national quintiles. So then really meant that a lot of schools in the Eastern Cape shifted from what they're 5 and 4 down. I mean, I think Eastern Cape put their 1 and 2 now even 53% when under the old system was popular. Whereas the Western Cape and Gauteng, instead of their put their 1 and 2 now being 40%, about 18% of the two combined. The issue is that we have to have an equitable and scientific basis under which we determine poverty. And the Northern Senators are very clear that we will use the best available information to make that determination. And we use the Central Africa information around the level of education of the children, about the income, and about the housing conditions. So this is done technically. It's a technicist exercise. However, the Northern Senators clearly say that out of the technical exercise, it should give a broad brush picture of the socioeconomic condition. Thereafter, we must apply ground truth to be able to see whether what the data say is for that. As the instances where there are two schools next to each other with a fence dividing it, is the head of department has the powers to be able to, when it's brought up to their attention, to be able to say, look, that this is just at first. And therefore, they have the power to change that. So there is a process in which it's particularly done. And the schools are entitled to an explanation of how their ranking is done, what is the ranking. The schools are also entitled to contest those particular rankings. So those are issues that we have to deal with through those particular processes. So either members can deal with it through provinces, but if there are cases that could be brought to our attention, we will also begin to look at it. Okay, in terms of the infrastructure also, I think a very important point is made by the FFC in regards to infrastructure. And in terms of their research, they really say that the research shows that any additional expenditure on infrastructure is not going to make a difference to quality. Now, we must take that as a given. However, they also say in the analysis that from a human rights point of view, our dignity assessment is not the right thing. And that we need to particularly deal with it. And so they're saying with limited funds, we have to change our targeting. So in the moment we do target schools that are in the poorest community and those that are most overcrowded. But what they're saying further, thirdly, is that in the prioritization process, we have to take schools that are going to give us the best return. If within the limited funds. And it sounds so, a lot of these recommendations, Chair, are useful, and we will be taking them up, further. There was a particular question, Chair, I am still not sure and clarified in my mind as to what is it that the CFO would probably also come in, is that the provinces have not adopted and entrenched the NSP as a full responsibility. I mean, we need more information on that, because it's a very shocking and surprising statement in terms of, it's anecdotal stuff that perhaps let's take it from that. But I mean, but it's always on the agenda in the HEDCOM, and it never really comes up. The classification problem is a technical issue. It is done at SCOA, or at SCOA level, the Standard Chart of Accounts level, and we are able to draw all that particular information. So if the FFC could just contact the department, we will be able to deal with that. I spoke about the expenditure, and I think I've covered all the particular points that have been made.
It's more of a practical, what is happening on the ground. When it comes to monitoring, we monitor And I say, when I report on these things from a school perspective, when I go down there, they want to reach out some food somewhere. And I think they
let me take the point raised by the commission around the role of the legislation and oversight. I want to keep the point. It is true that as a representative of the people, we do have got a very important role of ensuring that the executive do in fact implement the policies and the legislation it was made. But in the same vein, you also raised the issue which is to me very substantive. I recall, for example, with regard to the school nutrition scheme and other programs. When we went to Zimbombo last year or year before last, we requested the department to give us knowledge standards around school nutrition and infrastructure. Because truly, when we have got to monitor, we have to perform your oversight responsibility. You need some minimum norm in which now you'll be able to monitor, to be able to see to what extent it is being implemented. And in the absence of norms and standards, it becomes a big challenge. And I think that's the challenge that we're having. I can also recall early this year, I went to the district, in Bumala, one of the districts, and I asked the management, can you give me just your management framework of this problem, school nutrition? What is your management framework? They said, no, we don't have anything. That is being done by head office in the provincial. Now you go to the school, you ask the principal, can you just show me some nutrients of this problem? No, there is nothing. Now you have those discrepancies. Now how do you perform your legislative oversight without normative standards becomes a challenge? Hence, I want to agree with the Deputy Director General that most of the issues here are mostly technical and managerial. But there are two substantive issues. The first one is our funding, which we agree is a bit of a problem. But secondly, it is this question of normative standards. That is a substantive issue. It's a policy issue. In the absence of a policy framework, and in the absence of a management framework of this school nutrition program, we won't be able to address it. Because most of the issues that have been raised there are mostly managerial, some of them are intended voluntarily. If now a provincial department takes it as voluntarily, implicit in that, it suggests that there is no policy imperative. There's no policy imperative. Now you have to know these discrepancies, etc. So hence I want to say that in the absence of a policy framework or managerial framework from the national department, because they have to intervene, this problem has been going on time and again, as we are sitting now all over. Now we need an intervention. And National Department of Education has got a constitutional imperative to intervene in the form of a policy framework or a management framework. Now, an argument has been made that now the constraint is the budget. We cannot develop norms and standards because Treasury will come in that event. Which brings back the argument raised by the chair to say now, what comes first? You first decide on the money, then you come with the policy. Or you set a policy, objectives, etc., and then you say, now, we want money. And if there are financial constraints, we've got a framework, it is an idea that we were getting into. And as money allows us, then we'll be able to achieve. So I want to agree with the chair, and I want also to insist that we need a policy framework. One issue that has come up very clear. in the absence of a nonsense standard, there's no way in which you can monitor, we can see to what extent this program is being implemented. So I want to argue and say that now we want again to debate this issue very, very clearly and say that now norms and standards minimum, we quite accept that there will be some provisional dynamics. But here we're talking of simple minimum. To say that the promise you have to do this, I mean minimum management, minimum standards. There must be someone who is managing, you know. Just broadly. Now those minimum that can apply nationally. And then now the department will be able to be flexible, you know, within those norms. Because in the absence of that, this problem will never ever be resolved. Will come and again, will come again. So I want to say that now, to help us as members of parliament, as legislators, will meet minimum norms and standards. We cannot wait for money. I don't think that's the proper approach. Firstly, is a policy framework. This is what we want to achieve. We want to achieve in this way, and so on and so on and so on. And then now we can argue about the funding. Because if there's a program, and then now funding. If there's a problem with funding, then we can say, okay, by this time, we want to do this thing. It's a framework. But I think the point of departure, the framework is needed. So I want to ask you then, in that fashion. Then we'll deal with all these managerial issues once and for that framework. Because the mental department has got that responsibility. We cannot give it to the problem. Now, that also is being supported by the point which you raised and which I supported very strongly. You say recent experiences regarding this, this question of covering up, you know, this transaction, that you intend embark on a pilot project to take grade 10, 11, and 12 with regard to learning materials. What you have experienced is like a book that cost 1 rand in January, in June, cost 40 rand, which is just a cost of that amount. It says a lot about the management of this. And then the national department decided to take that responsibility. Because it's cost effective. I mean, one quarter. I'm not sure whether my reading is wrong. But I'm reading that now there is something about procurement and other things. But what I wanted to say is the fact that now, if this pilot will prove that it's more cost effective and schools are going to get what is actually needed, and I think that will be a very good intervention. Because schools will be able to get books in time, it is cost effective, and so on and so on. Instead of saying, no, there's diversity, people must allow that, and all the things they choose, and then they wait for procurement, why don't you give this friend or a brand and so on, then there's some delay. And who will suffer at the end? It's a child. We cannot allow diversity, we cannot allow people who will actually, their actions will undermine the interests of the child. So we want to support this move, this pilot. And we're looking at it with keen interest. And we hope that now, at the end, it will bear results. That's the kind of an intervention which we expect national to intervene in the provinces. When provinces seem to lack and so on. And if again, norms and standards, I think as a control committee, it will make our work much better. And we support you. And we'll take those provinces and those schools that are not implementing to have as we are expected.
Okay, I'm trying to move as fast as I can. In all these inputs we are putting in place, this is correct, to improve the quality of education. The obviously standing prices to be paid. Whether it's increasing transport, curriculum, capacity challenge, implementation strategy, monitoring,
And all these things, they center around the strength of the district office or secretary office. We have not mentioned it yet. They have to come in, but I think it's something that we have got to consider seriously. The workload on district offices as we move on to improve the quality of education is increasing. Is the capacity and the strength of these district offices, because everything will just collapse. We can have all these wonderful plans, as everybody has been saying here. If these three elements are not in place, capacity challenges in place, implement, and especially monitoring, we're dead. That's why you find that in many of these offices and district offices, the management teams or teams there, they, because of the workload, in my mind, they just move to a reactive crisis management mode. Can you get some clarity that later, in a later presentation, what does the department see it must put in place for all these nice things that we've been talking about today to work by strengthening those offices? Thank you.
Why don't we underline the later? I don't know how to start that debate now. I think, can we accept that the department later? I think it's one issue with the department. I think there's something that is good on that side. Well, why don't I then at this point in time tender the point? And the good news is that we're going to have a sit down lunch. We're all invited for a sit down lunch where hospitals. So we're going to take off in here, the crossover to hospitals. All of us, everybody. Everybody is welcome in that. Thank you all so much. I think it was a very good open I'm told it's already now broken. Sabandu, it's already on the broken.
Fine.
Oh,
fine. Thank you. I appreciate
that.
Remember, my members, something which is new.
Thank you.